Oh, that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. How you doing out there? Listen, you are in for a treat. I have Jim Shore right sitting across from me. Of course, he is an American folk artist. He has done all kinds of things. He's become huger and huger as time goes by. He has now working with Disney. Of course, he does all his Santas. He has an exhibit right now over at Lander. I tell you what, Jim, I'm going to tell you the truth. I went over there to look at your exhibit this afternoon before the show. It's closed. It's closed. So I had to stand on the outside and look around. And I'm telling you, the sketches that are covering the walls there. How many sketches do you have there?
That is roughly 1,000 of my sketches. And I don't know how many hundred of the actual sculptures are there.
Right.
But it's a pretty significant show as far as, you know, being able to demonstrate how the line has progressed, and also a little bit on what the process is, you know,
sure,
that we go through.
But as you look at it today, do you ever pinch yourself and say, you know, I can't believe this all came to pass?
Well, yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I'm very thankful that. That it came about the way it did. I'm always appreciative of the folks out there that share my enthusiasm, because they're the ones that actually make this thing, you know, a success, you know.
Sure.
And it's but there's so many aspects of it that it's like going down a winding road with a whole lot of forks in it, you know.
Right.
And you just look back and you think, okay, you know, the situations that happened that at the time seemed dire, you know, were essential in leading me in the right direction. That's why I'm always an optimist, you know. No matter what happens, I'm thinking, hey, something good is going to be around the corner.
Well, that's kind of the definition of a true business person, too, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
The very fact that you persist even when things, you were telling me before we went on the air that, you know, when you talk about flat broke, you were what they call concave.
you were
below flat
broke.
Yeah,
we were less than broke.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had to claw ourselves up to being broke, you know.
Yeah. So, how did you grow up? You're from York?
Yeah, I was raised in York, South Carolina, which is over in the Rock Hill area.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to high school there and all that. But you know, growing up, I guess the things that influenced me the most as a budding young artist, and it became obvious as I was really, really little that I had this. You know,
Were you always sketching and drawing
always,
and everything?
Always. I was always driven to it. And I did it from the time I was real little. You know, when whether I was sculpting in mashed potatoes or drawing on the wall, you know, it was always pretty good.
Pretty good?
Yeah. So it was obvious early on that I was, you know, bound to be.
So of course, you went to school for art, right?
Well, actually, no.
Why not?
Well, here's the thing. I encourage anybody to go to school. Mm-hmm. And get better at what their God-given talents are.
Okay.
In this regard. But you can't really teach somebody to be an artist any more than you can teach somebody to be a tall, athletic basketball player. They either are or they aren't.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I, at the time, back when I was at the age to consider art school, the art school had sort of been overtaken by the avant-garde. And I wasn't interested in that. They weren't interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I already knew, you know, the direction that I wanted to go artistically. And I just didn't feel like I needed to be influenced, you know, to change the way I just naturally was. It was okay
with
me.
You liked it the way you were.
Yeah, because early on, yeah.
Okay, Jim, you liked the way you were. Okay.
Yeah, which is not unusual, I guess, for you know the teenage population.
Right.
But my natural art style, mm-hmm. while I'm viewed largely as a folk artist because of the way I approach things now, is actually photographic realism. When I do portraits, or I do landscapes, or I do wildlife or what have you, then I'm shooting for absolute extreme accuracy and extreme perfection. Never quite get there, but that's what I'm shooting for.
But then on the other side, you have the whimsical side, right?
I do. In fact, my whole line that people are so familiar with, the Heartwood Creek line, other things I do with Disney and that sort of stuff, it's based largely on my love and respect of folk art. So while I'm not really a folk artist, you know, to be a folk artist, you have to be like the real thing. It's like being a blues singer. You know, you have to be on the Delta and your woman ran away and your dog died and, you know, and all this, you know, in order to
really
sing down. The blues.
Yeah, to sing the blues, okay.
Yeah, and you know, folk art's the same way. But folk art, see, has, it's very Americana.
Correct.
And it's got this innocence, this purity that is refreshing. And it's delightful.
In today's world, yes, very much so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I've always loved that. I've loved that about it. Because, for one thing, you see so many artists that are so full of themselves, but they're predicated on getting that gallery show or getting the commission or making this, making that, and making a name for themselves. Not so with folk art. Folk art's done by people who are just common people. A lot of them don't even consider themselves artists. They're not after anything other than making something pretty.
Right.
And I'm sort of driven to that, too, see?
But your grandmother was a quilter.
Now, my grandmother was a master quilter.
A master quilter.
She was, I mean, seriously, people say, oh, my grandmother's a wonderful quilter, or my aunt's a, my grandmother was a master quilter.
And did she teach you quilting?
And, well, I spent so much time with her and was so influenced with her. Maybe that was my education, because everything that goes into a good quilt or, a good piece of handwork like that, where it's color balance and rhythm and syncopation and composition and all those elements that go together to define a well-crafted piece of artwork, can be found in a quilt in spades.
Yes.
And so she taught me so much about those things without actually sitting down and saying, hey, Jim, I'm going to teach you something today.
Right.
You know, I was just there and I absorbed it. And I saw her passion, you know, the way she approached things. And I wanted to be like that, too. And so she was a wonderful influence, and my whole family was, really, because they were all creative. So it was they create a wonderful environment for a, you know, a young, artist to grow up
sure.
in. Very encouraging and so on.
And your mom, what did she do?
She was a painter.
Sure.
And
okay.
Actually, early on, she had wanted to go to art school, too, and it just didn't work out for her. But she could have been, in her own right, she was a good artist. She could have been a very successful artist had things turned out a little bit different, because she was that good.
And then your dad was a cabinet maker.
My dad was a cabinet maker and extremely good with his hands, and one of those kind of guys that it never occurred to him that there was something he couldn't do. You know, and he sort of instilled that in us boys. In other words, his idea of doing it was, hey, boys, we're going to
do this. Right. I like it. You know, I think we've lost some of that in today's world.
I think so, too. You know, it's a shame, really. We were so self-reliant, and we did things. I mean, my brother and I, we'd get up before, before breakfast and go out and do probably as much work before breakfast as a lot of kids do in a month,
yeah.
You know. And you don't like it necessarily at the time. You look back on it, and it's some of your fondest memories. Because
yeah.
It shapes you in a certain way, you know, and that's the way we grow up.
Yeah, Jeff always talks, that's my husband that you were talking to, he always talks about when he was really young, he had to go fire up the boilers. His dad was in the lumber business,
oh, yeah.
And they had to fire up the boilers. And there was no question about it. You just were going to get up and do this.
Well, that's the way we always were. I mean, we had our, we had our chores. We had a little farmette, you might call it, a little scratch farm, you know.
Farmette.
Yeah, well, that's what they call it now.
Okay, farmette, I like it.
It was just a little, couple of squares of dirt, you know,
right.
Really back where we. But we, we grew a lot of our own stuff. We were pretty self-sufficient, and sort of had to be, because we didn't have a lot. I mean, we were poor.
Did you know it?
We didn't think about it at the time.
Right, exactly.
But we always worked, we always worked and we worked hard and we never questioned the need to work. And like I said, we might have complained about it a little bit here and there, but we always did it. And that continues with me personally today. I mean, I get up very early in the morning and I can't wait to get started. And I get started and I work. I have this quiet time before everybody else gets up, see, and that's a very productive time for me. And then I go to the studio, which is over in the same area. Actually, it's in Chester County, mm-hmm. Next county south. And I work there, and I've got a little team that, works with me.
You're old enough to retire, though, aren't you?
I am. I'm old enough to retire, and I've, I... I was able to retire, you know, I mean, the way things worked out 10 years ago.
Right.
But the scale of what I do has gotten so big, and quite frankly, there's so many people that are, you know, dependent in one way or another on the thing continuing. And we've tried.
But if you didn't create another design, where would they be?
Well, that's just it.
Exactly.
That's just it. And so many people are so integral to the success of what I do. I mean, I get a lot of pats on the back because I'm, you know, visible as the artist.
Person. Right.
But there are so many people that are, you know, together
made
this thing work. And there's a lot to it. In fact, that's one of the things that I like to stress when I'm talking to, you know, students and so forth about how to put together something that is successful. And you have to understand that just because you're a good cook does not equate to a successful restaurant.
Sure.
There's a lot of, you know,
there's
other
all
things.
The business side
there's
to
the,
it.
There's the business side. And there's a little bit of serendipity in there too, but you can kind of push that along if you plan and use your head and you know, are truly prepared for everything that may befall you.
Well, when we come back after we hear a quick word from our sponsors, we're going to find out that he got a degree in business, not in art, but in business. And he supported his young family as an engineer, not as a sculptor and a painter, but he did that in his spare time. We're going to find out how he took the plunge and went out there into the world and how this whole story comes together. So I'm here with Jim Shore today. I'm Ann Eller. Let's hear a quick word from our sponsors, and you know, we'll be right back.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. It's a kind of a cloudy afternoon, but we are here with Jim Shore. And he, of course, you've seen his work, whether you realize it or not, you've seen his work. But one of the things I want to spend some time talking about is, here you were, you decided that you wanted to do something more. Now, we do need to mention you do have 6 children, Jim.
I do. I have 6 children, 5 girls and a boy, so I want everyone to pray for me.
But that was quite an undertaking right there.
Yeah. Well, having a big family and keeping everybody together and keeping everybody happy and being a good father to all of them, because they're all different. They all need different things. It's a challenge. Yeah, it's been a challenge, but while there's no handbook in it, you know, my wife and I, we've done as well as we can. And quite frankly, the girls have turned out good.
Right.
To our, you know,
in fact,
great
one of your
relief.
Daughter is teaches over at Lander.
Yeah, she's a professor at Lander in art.
Right.
And so I'm very proud of her. In fact, she was really the instrumental one, the workhorse behind getting that the gallery
getting
display
the
put
show
together.
Over here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, listen, how did you decide to take the plunge? I mean, here you were working as an engineer and just trying to keep the family above water here, and you were working, and of course, then you still had your art, and were you doing it in a mule shed? Is that what you told me?
Well, you know, that's true. That's true. When I give talks, I like to stress the fact that I know all about being a starving artist. That's a very easy thing to do.
Absolutely.
We were down to the point of taking up residence one time in a little cottage, I guess you could loosely call it, that had been at one time converted from a mule shed, and so it was pretty basic, but but I didn't really care, and the kids didn't either. I mean, we have a loving, you know, family, and we weren't. We didn't feel deprived or anything. I mean, we had our eyes on the horizon, you might say, and that sounds cliche, but that's the truth. I mean, I never felt like success wasn't just right around the corner.
Now, your wife sounds like to me in the story that you've told me, though, has kind of been instrumental about, you know, let's take the next step.
The truth is that without her influence, quite frankly, I don't know what I'd be doing right now, because she's the one that's been sort of pushing, you know, me to really utilize my artwork and giving me the, you know, the confidence and building and all that stuff to say, yeah, we can do this. And she's the one that's kind of the brains of the duo, I guess.
Yes.
But because she's the one that always said, okay, let's do this show, let's do that. You know, you know, let's.
So you started out doing a craft show.
We started out doing craft shows, and yeah, you alluded to me doing engineering and design work and so forth. You know, early on, I have my primary pursuit has always been art, mm-hmm. because I always knew that that's what I was born to do. But you know, to be pragmatic about it, I knew that I had to, you know, make a living somewhere along the line.
Sure.
Now, I never worked, you know, directly for anyone. When I was doing design work, I would come in on contract, do the contract, accumulate enough money to coast for a while I'm doing artwork. And so that's
truly artist philosophy.
It's kind of like technical gypsy, you know,
right.
for a while. And until we got to the point where we felt like we could devote full time to the mm-hmm. to the artwork. But it's, you know, it kept us afloat and it kept us going. It was always nice to know that in push come to shove, I had something to, you know,
fall back on,
yeah.
But you did that Charlotte Christmas show.
Okay, that
and
was...
And you had a plan? You had this all worked out, how this was going to go?
Oh, yeah, we had a terrific plan. Yeah, we knew exactly how it was going to work. Actually, how it worked was that Jan and I sat down. We said, okay, look, we're broke. We're going to have to do something. So what are we going to do until we decide what we're really going to do? And Jan said, well, you have all these pieces of artwork and stuff that you've been working on, these sculptures and little things that you've been making. A lot of it was for the entertainment of the kids, quite frankly.
Okay.
And she said, let's go to the Charlotte Christmas show and see if we can get a booth at the Charlotte Christmas show, and we can see if we can take some orders. And then we can figure out, maybe if we're lucky, how to make them to fill
okay.
the orders.
Right.
And so that was the step one. So sure enough, we were able to get a booth at the Christmas show miraculously, because it's pretty much a sold out show. And
that was back in the late 70s.
Yeah, it was
right?
back in the 70s, right? And so we had our stuff and set up the booth, and actually took a reasonable amount of orders. And it just so happened there were some people there that did some small casting operations, so we got with them and were able to, you know, fill the orders using, you know, their casting capabilities. And by the end of the year, as I told you earlier, we had made almost $3,000.
Woohoo!
We were in hog heaven, you know. So we were so thrilled with that we vacationed in Arizona.
Okay.
And that was the. You know, not the most responsible thing to do, but it was like celebrating the fact that, hey, I mean, we can do this.
And then you came back, and people were still giving you
orders
in January. Yeah,
we came back figuring, okay, now we'll figure out something else to do. And lo and behold, we had all these additional orders coming in, even though it was
for Santa Clauses and whatnot.
Yeah, for Santa Clauses in January.
Right.
So we started filling these orders, and eventually, very quickly, we started doing our own casting. And we started in a little shed that was on the property there. And within 3 years, though, we had bought a cotton warehouse, and then we turned it into a manufacturing facility.
And something you probably couldn't do in today's world.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, today would be very difficult to do what we did back then, because we didn't have anybody around telling us no.
Right.
And so, and of course, through the course of the 3 years, we had hired 355 employees.
This sounds like it's a busting at the seams business here, Jim.
It was. It was.
Because it driving you crazy?
It drove me absolutely nuts. And it wasn't the creative part of it. That was being sort of pushed aside because of all of the, you know, the demands. Of. I mean, you can't imagine when you have a growth curve that goes straight up. There's a lot to take care of.
Well, there's two things that can happen. You can have too much business or not enough business.
You're absolutely right. And sometimes one's as bad as the other.
Absolutely. Hey, it's time for South Carolina News. I am here with Jim Shore. We're going to hear more of his story of success. And he's sitting right here with me today. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help. from McDonald's McCafé cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafé mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. I think Gracie is going to be quiet for this final 15 minutes of the show. At least I'm holding her very close to me, so I think she'll be quiet.
I appreciate her enthusiasm.
She does get a little wrapped up with our guests sometimes. That's
true.
She
barked in all the right places, you know.
Thank you, Gracie. That's right. All right. So we're talking about Walt Disney and the greatness of that. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to bring up that I think is so interesting, Jim, is you told me that here you had 355 people working for you. You decided you needed to do something. You just really weren't happy because you were having to deal with business and try to do creativity, right? So you and your wife went up to Chicago.
We did.
That was a leap of faith.
Well, you know, at the time, looking back on it, it seemed like probably a pretty foolhardy thing to do. You know, just go up there cold, you know.
No introduction, nobody to Sega, come on by and see us.
That's right. And nobody to, you know, pave the way or anything. And I guess if I was doing it today, I'd do it completely differently. But at the time, we didn't think about it. We just piled some stuff in the car. And we took off and headed north.
Drove to Chicago from South Carolina.
And now the reason we went to Chicago is because that is the home office of a company called Inesco. And that's the company I licensed to. They're the largest and without a doubt the most successful gift company in the world. And so that's we figured we'd start at the top, you know.
Right.
And so we went to Chicago. Went to a payphone, called them up.
Payphone?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people listening probably won't be able to relate to that. But that used to be the place where Superman would get changed.
Right,
I don't
exactly.
know what he does today,
yeah.
you know. But
changes in his smartphone. Yes, there you go.
So anyway, we got up there and talked to somebody in product development or marketing. I can't recall which. And they immediately rejected me. They said, we're not really interested in bringing on anybody. And we get requests like this all the time. And, you know, we don't have
and
time.
And who are you anyways?
Yeah, they didn't know me from Adam. And but I begged. And I prostrated myself. And I sobbed openly. And I guess
on a payphone, did you have to put another quarter in? Yeah. Okay.
And I was just so pathetic. I guess you know. I guess they felt sorry for me. And they said, "Okay, you can have 10 minutes in the lobby."
In the lobby.
Yeah. And so I'm thrilled. I think 10 minutes. Hey, come in the door.
Right.
So we drive over, and I take some examples of my stuff in, and they send down a person to talk to me. Who is a good friend of mine to this very day, who actually wasn't an Inesco employee at the time. He was a freelancer, mm-hmm. which, looking back on it, was kind of an insult, but who cares, you know?
Yeah. You didn't know any better
got
at the
job
time.
Done. So he said, flat out, he said, he told me his name, he said, my job is to get rid of you. You've got 10 minutes. And so I basically handed him this design book that I had accumulated hundreds and hundreds of design similar to the designs that you will see if you go to the show at the gallery.
Right.
And so I gave that to him, and he started looking through those, and he said, let's take this up to the conference room and spread it around and get a better look at it. And I thought, that's going to take more than 10 minutes. So I figured, I got this. And before the end of the day, we had a deal memo for a contract. So that's what started us into down the road of licensing. So it's been it's been wonderful because I can turn my entire attention towards what I do best, and that's the creative side of it.
Sure.
So.
And yet, when you went through those doors, you didn't have any idea that you would be rejected, did you?
Not at all.
You were just positive that they were going to love your stuff.
Well, I think all artists, you know, have this. Confidence in their work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's other people can't always see it.
Right.
But that's not your fault. That's their fault. Yeah.
Exactly.
But no, the thing about Inesco is that they're predicated on art.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're always looking for good art.
Right.
And I knew that, and I was pretty confident in this, that the designs that I could show them would fit the bill for what they do. And they're savvy and all that. And as artists themselves, they can see things that the average person,
can't see. Well, that is pretty awesome. So that was the beginning. Now, though, you do licensing work with Disney.
I do work with Disney. I do work with the Rudolph people. If you're anybody who's familiar with that that movie, the Rudolph. I do work with Wizard of Oz. Do the renditions on that. I do work with Gone with the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I now do Peanuts and some of the other characters and some of the. The Warner Brother characters like
Looney Tunes.
Yeah, Looney Tunes, Bugs Bunny, and Yosemite Sam, and those kind of things. Now, what I do when I do those co-brands like that, the object is first and foremost to make my character absolutely faithful to the Disney character or the whatever.
Gone with the Wind or whatever. Okay.
And so that it's there's no question that. I am, first and foremost, creating a rendition of that character, that piece.
Then, do you find that confining?
No.
No? Okay.
No, I think it's an exercise. It's challenging and it's quite entertaining, really.
And cha-ching.
Okay.
So
bit of that.
There you go. Okay.
A little bit of that, and I won't deny it, but that's not what motivates me.
Okay.
And it's, I guess, easy to say now that we're doing pretty good.
Right.
But it really, in truth, never has been. It's like walking in the door at UNESCO. Those sort of things just are slow to occur to me, I never really wanted to do anything more than be able to support the family
mm-hmm.
and do my artwork.
I think you've done that rather well, Jim.
Well, thank you very much. But first and foremost, it wasn't a matter of chasing dollars.
Mm-hmm.
It was a matter of chasing what I consider my God-given gift with passion. And I think that's the magic word. That's the key word that for artists or quite frankly, anybody else.
Sure.
You can see it in yourself. The people that know you and listen to you every day, they know that you have a passion for what you do, and that's why you're respected, and that's why you're an award-winning in your own right.
Sure. Well, yes. There has to be that passion.
Exactly.
Because some days, why would you sit down and do this? That's what I ask myself some days. But I love doing it, And I could be having a bad day and come in here and sit down and start talking to, whether it's Jim Shore or whoever, and all of a sudden I'm having a great day.
I'm exactly the same way. I can be tired. I can be, maybe a little bit out of sorts. And when I start on a piece or a drawing or a sculpture or whatever, I can get immersed in that. The rest of the world fades away, and it's just me and it, and it's a wonderful way of spending your life, doing something that you're driven to do, and be able to do well, and be able to make a living doing it too.
What would you think your grandmother would say today?
Grandmother would be very pleased with me today, I think, with the way it's come about. She always was very happy when any of her, her grandchildren or her family. Did something well, or succeeded at something. I had a cousin that everybody always looked to because she was always she's great at playing piano. She's great at swimming. Great at this. Great at that.
She was one of those. Yeah, we know what you're talking about, Jim.
So, and I was always, Jim's the artist, Nice drawing, Jim.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, Cheryl, what are you doing today?
Yes, exactly.
But Grandma wasn't like that. She spread her love around through all of us, and she would have been very pleased.
That's terrific. Now, any projects that you're working on?
One project that I'm working on that I am very, very enthusiastically pursuing is really quite an honor really for me, and I look at it that way. I'm doing the main sculpture for the Special Forces headquarters, the brand new headquarters at Fort Bragg. And it's in bronze, which is a little bit of a departure from what I normally do. For one thing, the statue is 10 feet tall.
You're kind of short, Jim. This is going to be a challenge.
Well, they provided a ladder.
A ladder, okay.
But that'll be cast in at a foundry that I like working with down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go down there from, you know, periodically and wrap up the all the sculptural aspects of it, and then assist in the actual, you know,
now,
casting.
Did you make this? Have you made the sculpture out of something?
That's the process. The process when you're casting in bronze, you do it in, it doesn't matter what you do. It could be wood, could be clay, could be.
What did you make this one out of?
Well, this one is clay. Now, what we do, I've made a model already. So the model is about a foot and a half tall. And it's in every detail exactly what the big one's going to be.
Okay.
And then we make a 3D scan of that, and then we create an armature, which is a metal sort of a skeleton.
Okay.
Foam that with a styrene foam.
Okay.
And then with our 3D, you know, thing with lasers and all that stuff, we make this shape very, very, very close to what the finished piece is going to be.
Okay.
Then we coat that with a layer of grease clay or a, you know, plastiline, mm-hmm. and then we sculpt all the details in that. So it's all made out of clay.
Wow.
Then we do a mold, and then we cast it in wax. So now we have this big statue made out of wax.
Down in Florida, it's kind of hot down there now, Jim.
They got AC.
Yeah, I can't. All right.
And then we make a mold of that, and we heat the mold, melt the wax away.
It's called lost wax.
Lost wax.
Right.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. It's whether you're making a ring or whether you're making a 10-foot sculpture. It's the same process. And then we fill that cavity with bronze and haul it up to Fort Bragg, have a nice big ceremony, and it'll stay there for many years to come.
Perpetuity. That's pretty awesome. That is pretty awesome.
Well, we're a patriotic family. Yeah. My father-in-law is 94 years old. He lives with us at the lake. Mm-hmm. He's a career Army, Battle of the Bulge.
Wow.
Two Purple Hearts, a Silver Star, commendation for the Congressional Medal of Honor. And so we take our appreciation of military very seriously. That's why I was so delighted to get the opportunity to create that for them.
Now, is that the biggest thing you've ever done?
I've done Grace. Some pretty big pieces. It's the biggest bronze I've done.
Biggest bronze?
Mm-hmm. Most of the pieces I do are either cast out of a polyester.
Right.
You know, the figural pieces that you see, those are polyester.
Right.
And right now we fill those with fill the polyester with calcium carbonate, which is like ground marble.
Right.
So it's kind of a stony material.
Have you done some big Mickey Mouses or anything like that?
I have done some fairly good-sized Mickey Mouses, and I've done some very, very large dwarfs. You know, it's kind of an oxymoron, but...
large dwarfs?
Yeah. Yeah, the seven dwarfs. Are, you know, see, that's one thing about doing Disney. I was very, very happy when I was invited by Disney to do this collaboration some years ago. I think we've done it for 14 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy that the prospects of doing the Mickey, Minnie, all the iconic pieces, but I was particularly happy with doing everything else.
Sure.
All the different movie characters, and it just goes on forever. I'm working.
You don't
on,
run out of work that
no,
way.
No, I don't.
Yes.
I'm working on a Peter Pan collection right now. I just finished another grouping of the Frozen pieces that everybody loves so much.
Right.
So I'm staying busy, but I work on the Disney continuously. I work on the subject of angels continuously. Then the rest of it, I sort of, you know, wherever our brainstorming, you know, leads us, you know.
Do you ever sit down and go, I can't come up with a darn thing here today, folks?
When that happens, I'll retire.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, sometimes you just...
Well, people, you know, everybody says, oh, do you ever draw a blank? Or, you know, like a writer's block and all that stuff? No, because of the way the process works. And I can't really explain the process, quite frankly, because I don't understand it totally myself. But when the word is said, or when I read the word, and it might be a description of what we collectively in our brainstorming
right.
with everybody involved decide is going to be the line,
right?
Then I just get an image. It's automatic. It's like saying, think of a pink elephant. Well, you just automatically think of a pink elephant. If I told you not to think of a pink elephant, you'd think of a pink elephant.
Right, okay.
And it's the same kind of process. And so I'm basically copying what my imagination just conjured up. And I store that away, file it away, and the line that I create might be 200 pieces for that particular design time, and I just go back and get it back up again and do it exactly the way I see it in my mind.
Now, are you the type of person that once you start working on something, you don't want to be disturbed and you just want to keep working and working and working till it's done?
I love doing the work, and just by nature, the fact that there are disturbances and there are things that, you know, that pull me away from time to time, but I don't have a schedule. I wake up early and I start working, and I might work until it's time for me to wake up early again sometimes, you know?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Sometimes you can get just so into your work that you don't even realize that.
Yeah, I love the feeling of immersing myself in work. You know, it's a good feeling to be, you know, just really into it, you know? Yeah.
Now, what is it that, is there anything that you would like to do that you haven't done yet?
Well, I've done sculpture and I've done carving and early on, I did stained glass, and I did jewelry making, and I did custom furniture, and I did decorative ironwork, and I've done a lot of things that require a creative touch. Mm-hmm. So, and I like doing them all. And quite frankly, I'm equipped to do them all now. I do custom knives in my spare time, and you know, a lot of different little things like that.
You're obsessive, aren't you?
I am.
Yes. Okay. What would you like to be able to spend more time on?
I'd like to get into doing some more serious painting. I enjoyed that. It's a great way of expressing yourself, and there's so many great subjects out there, you know, that, you know, to storytelling through, you know, through paintings.
Would your painting be folk arty type painting?
No.
No.
It would be my actual styling, which is generally photographic realism, but I would involve some little bit of fantasy and some abstraction and some surrealism.
Like Tinkerbell over the top? No, just tease.
Who knows?
Who knows? Tinkerbell could be there.
It's one of my favorite subjects.
Ann Eller said something about Tinkerbell in this painting. I'm going to put it in there, yeah. That's pretty cool.
Now, tomorrow morning, I might add, for the interest of your listeners out there, I'll be giving a talk at Lander that will be open to the public.
Public, okay.
And it'll be at the gallery, the Monsanto gallery there at the campus. And, you know, anybody who wants to come and listen.
What time is it?
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock in the morning. We're having a few little festivities this evening with some of the folks from the university. Okay. But tomorrow, anybody that wants to can come. And there'll be some of the art students there. They'll want to listen to whatever it is I can impart to them.
I think fascinating. You know, you're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. I think one of the hardest things in today's world, we're going to carry this over just a second, one of the hardest things to carry over in today's world with young people, the arts, the artist, is the communication aspect of it. Because communication is so different than when you were growing up and how you communicated with the people that you do the work for and everything. And it's hard in today's world because it is basically, I think, pretty cold.
Well, I think that one of the problems with the technological age, it has become a sort of a two-edged sword, and I think that socially we'll regret that at some point because in order, you know, for a society to really, you know, thrive and flourish, interaction between everyone is absolutely essential, and when you're relying on your, you know, communication skills and so forth to be limited to texting or to, you know, cyber or something or another, it takes away from that personal contact or the skills required to be successful at personal contact.
Exactly.
And you know, we as well in the modern age should be getting better and better and better at everything.
Correct.
We should be, you know, better educated. We should have better skills, but do better than we've ever done before. And in some cases, we're regressing. We talked earlier about the fact that some areas aren't even teaching students cursive writing.
Right.
Now, when you consider that our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence is written in cursive,
they
could go to the National Archives and look at that document, and it might as well be in Farsi or
You're
something.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
It's a shame.
It is a shame. And what will happen, Jim, when people don't know that that's your signature, that they signed your piece, that you signed a piece?
Well, I will have an X with a witness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that becomes less personal, don't you think?
Absolutely. And in fact, people frequently I pride myself in a legible signature, mm-hmm. and I do a lot of, from time to time I do calligraphy, so I enjoy the art of the handwritten word, and I try to do make it pretty, mm-hmm. and make it artistic too.
Right.
And I'm always commented on, people frequently comment on it, and it's like, wow, I can't believe that, it's so beautiful, it's so, flowery and everything. I'm thinking, it's just writing, I mean, why can't everybody?
Say that if you don't write, you lose the ability to write.
Yeah. And there's something that triggers in your brain that's important. It's important to connect. It's just like speaking.
Right.
Speaking is a way of, it's a modulation that we share in, and writing is the same way. And it's a mechanism that stimulates you in a way that nothing else can.
Exactly.
And to lose that, I don't know what the eventual outcome of that will be, but I don't think it'll be good.
I agree with you.
I encourage all the students that I talk to, reach out. Expand your horizons. Think about all this stuff. Get good at everything. And that includes, interpersonal contact, writing, reading, thinking,
Exactly.
And make yourself a person that's going to be able to be productive and to be somebody who's going to contribute rather than somebody who is just an introvert looking at a screen.
Exactly. I think you're right. Hey, Jim Shore, it certainly has been a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm so glad you could make time to come on and sit down with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Anne. It's been an absolute delight.
Thank you so much. You are listening to WCRS. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, you'd like to meet Jim Shore. You'd like to talk to him some more. He's going to be talking over there at Lander, and I believe even after he finishes, he'll probably hang around a little bit and talk some too, won't you, Jim?
I certainly will.
All right. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS. Bye-bye, everybody.